Welcome back. This is Corey Smart with Creative Disturbance. We're talking today for the new Leonardo's channel. I'm here with Roger Molina. Roger, you want to give a quick introduction?
Okay, so I'm Roger Molina. I am an astrophysicist and art science researcher here at UT Dallas.
I'm Ruth West. I'm an art science researcher, and I head up the X-Rays Art Science Lab at University of North Texas.
Fantastic, fantastic. So today we're going to be talking, a little bit about sound, and it's kind of the implementations and the ways it's changed over the years. So, Ruth, you want to start us off here a little bit?
Well, we were just talking about how when you're at your, let's say in your workplace or in your creative studio and you're looking at things online on a 2D monitor, why is it that if sound comes up, you're very apt to turn it off in order to be able to actually do the task at hand? And so that led us to this conversation of, the purpose of sound and in experience. So I think that's an interesting way to start thinking about how it is that as we expand the ways that we're interacting with digital content, with VR, personalized HMD VR versus group immersive VR, like what's the role of audio there and, the ways to take that.
So I guess, one of the comments there that I made was the three of us are sitting in this room around a table with a microphone in between us, and we are having no trouble shifting from our visual sense to listening. We listen and stop looking, and so clearly our brain is very comfortable switching between things. But as soon as somehow you got to do it through technology, these things get separated in some way. And in fact, there are sound technicians and visual technicians and mixing technicians. And one of the things you were talking to us about, Corey, is that this debate is hot and heavy in the head-mounted display Oculus Rift world. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, yes. With the Oculus and the new kinds of virtual reality that are currently coming out, there's been a couple debates on how sound should be involved. Unfortunately, technology really hasn't caught up enough to try all the methods people want to propose, but we have seen a couple different attempts, such as one sort of constant sound where it doesn't change based on where you're looking, like almost like background music or background noise. There have been a few that have made it where, depending on where you're looking, you're hearing only what you're looking at, and it's not quite a virtual environment yet. But I think this is going to change a whole lot, and it kind of brings about the idea of implementation, I think. People, as you were saying, with browsers, people tend to go through without sound. And I think a lot of people tend to view sound as kind of an addition to the visual aspect or the physical aspect of what they're dealing with. And yet, I find a lot of times that when the sound isn't present, they notice it so much more than when they don't care if the sound's there, kind of thing. Like with browsing or something, half the time they turn the sound off, but if they're expecting sound or they go to a website where there's sound and there's no sound, they just feel like it's missing.
You want to pick up on that, Ruth, a little bit?
Or? Well, I was just thinking about this in terms of the fact that when we're talking about virtual reality or augmented or mixed reality, in effect, what we're really saying is simulation. And what are we simulating? Our experience. We want to take ourselves to other places through simulated experience, but we exist embodied. And so when we say, well, we're adding sound, in effect, we're really saying we haven't figured out how to simulate the holistic experience of what we are. And so this notion of being present in a simulated environment in relation to who we are and everything we bring to it, that's really where the challenge is with the sound. And so I was just thinking about, the Sensorama machine that Morton Hellig initially created, where you sat in this thing and there were smells, there was wind, there was whatever, coming at you to try and actually activate all the your senses, haptic, vibratory. Then there was that body glove and the data glove. And you know what I'm talking about? There's this.
Okay, let me inject a couple of things into the discussion. Let me just start with one. So one of the discussions with Scott Gresham Lancaster has been trying to think about how one deploys sound. And we kind of talk about three levels. One is technologies of intention. What is your intent? clearly, if you're designing an alarm system, you want people's attention to focus immediately, and that's a very specific intention that you're using. The next is technologies of attention, right? So there, clearly, and as you said, in one case it's background music, but in the other case the person is speaking, and you've got to hear the sound, and so you've got to be paying attention to the sound of that person speaking. And then the third level, and we've been inconsistent in what we call it, but it's what I call a technology of distraction. So if you're designing a restaurant, normally a good restaurant, the sound environment is designed so that the echoes and the people talking, the noise isn't too loud, but it's a warm sound, and you feel safe in the restaurant, right? And so clearly the sound there is not attracting your attention or your intention, but it's indeed, if you like, music that actually is consistent with what it is you're doing at the time. And I think people often mix up what they're using sound for. And in your example in the Oculus, that's a good example, where if you just want a background sound playing, well, that's very clear. You don't design that the same way.
And I would almost say that I think to some extent it's partly because the Oculus, the virtual reality, is so new that we haven't made a standard yet for the sound, for the visual aspects, for how it should be implemented. When video first came out, I mean, it was kind of the thing. There was just sound effects. And then as it got better and improved visual effects, things like that, there was more of background music with specific sounds that were highlighted instead of all sounds.
I'm going to contradict you, but because Ruth and I have the bad news to break to you.
Okay, go for it.
Head-mounted VR has been around since the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
So this problem is at least 50 years old.
Yeah.
Now, it's getting cheaper.
here's what's new. Ubiquity. So ubiquity, connectivity, and mobility. Those things are new. That's transformative. So the supporting platforms to allow this to become part of
everyday
life in a way that adds something to things you would otherwise either not be able to do, so it gives you a new capacity or enhances something. That's really new because and it's within a price point that's accessible.
So that means two things. One is there are going to be thousands of people doing experiments, mm-hmm. whereas in the past there were hundreds. I mean, as the price is coming down, different people are doing very different kinds of things. And then I think, as Ruth just said, I think one of the other things is a lot of the head-mounted displays in the past were clunky enough that you had to go to a special room to do it. The ability to use the Oculus in your living room brings it into everyday life.
There's more. It's more than just your living room. There's ones that have LiDAR scanners that are going to map out the world that's in front of you and put, graphically rendered content into the physical reality. There's this blending between physical and virtual along that, like, Milgram's continuum of virtuality, that it's really going to make it a continuum now. It's not just these discrete points that you can say, my phone, I do AR, on my HMD, I do VR, or if I have a see-through, I'm doing MR.
Yeah.
There's now a real possibility for that continuum, which I think is going to bring us closer to really being able to experience being present in a way where it's going to be more seamless.
Mm-hmm.
And so that audio, the role of audio in that is then how do you get audio to actually go along those things? Are you using audio to support attention or to support kind of a generalized shift in state of consciousness?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
What I was calling distraction.
Yes,
or
distraction.
Whatever, it's a bad word. Another comment, and then I'll let Kari jump in. So one of the chats that we had with Frank Dufour, who's a faculty member here, is that, in fact, this is almost 150-year-old story, because in the 19th century, when the technology of sound recording developed and of image recording, in fact, there was a technological divergence of how that was done. So wax cylinders for sound and so on, and eventually photographic plates. It took a long time, actually, for talkies in the film industry to develop. So for forever, it was visual movies with the background sound. And the talkie took 60 years to be invented, basically. And so it's almost a historical accident that when people started developing recording technology, sound and vision were treated so differently. And so now suddenly, when in the same VR environment, you can in fact interact with both seamlessly, that's overcoming that 150-year history. I don't know, you're nodding, Corey, you want to add to it?
No, I don't know. I'm still thinking on one thing, and I'm going to pose this question to you and our listeners. I kind of see a lot of like new technology things that come out, even if it's been around for a while, as eventually it'll hit a kind of standardization. And this is the basic idea that this is how it's done, the best way kind of thing. And I don't know, I was just thinking from previously, what do you think leads to that? Do you think the standardization comes from the mainstream aspect when it's put out to the world? Everyone likes this method over this method. Do you think it's a technical decision?
Okay, I think there are many things that come into place. And indeed, I was just at SIGGRAPH a few weeks ago, and there must have been 18 manufacturers of head-mounted displays, all with their own widget, and Microsoft has the Holo something, and Google has the this, and there are all these new companies. So clearly we're in a phase. From my point of view, what's totally missing is the killer application, where it's quite clear that the only way you can do something is with a head-mounted display. And so sometimes I kind of feel it's a solution looking for the problem. And now, you know, in research, there are very well-established VR situations where you've got to have VR. And Ryan McMahon here, who teaches VR, is doing these training VR things for hazardous environments, and it's clearly that the VR is the right way to do that. But in the sort of general space, we don't yet have that killer application, which then will drive the manufacturers to make sure that they have intercompatibility or interoperability. And I don't know. I've not yet seen one Oculus project which I said, wow, I want to see that six times. I know, Ruth, go ahead.
Well, I agree with that actually wholeheartedly. And, I was thinking, okay, it's going to date me, but way back when you hand-coded your HTML pages and everyone was experimenting, and I remember there were these things called frames, and there were these artworks where people would, like, make the frames movable, and you never knew, like, Jody, you know, Jody.
Yeah.
You never knew, like, okay, the next time you go to the web page, it's a completely different web page. There's no standardization navigation. And all of a sudden, like, a few years after that, all of a sudden it became commercialized. And so now people did studies and said, you need to give people 3 to 5 choices or they won't make a decision or they'll leave the web page. And top left, people then, they did the heat mapping. People look top left, scan to the right. So essentially, the use of the medium as a means to an end. What end? Profit generation, right? Force the standardization because you want someone to achieve another goal. It's not the end in itself. And so I think this convergence of the recording technology, visual and auditory recording technology, because we don't have haptic recording technologies yet, into a simulation space, which is really what the virtual is about, right? And then making that continuous with whatever our daily activities are. I'm happy for the diversity.
I agree. And I have seen a couple different methods. Probably my two favorite for this virtual reality style is, I know there's a company, I can't think of the name now, but they're currently working on making a virtual amusement park. I don't know if you've seen the videos for this, but basically it's kind of, they just, the video they show, they have basically a warehouse kind of thing, a maze in there, and you go in there with the Oculus, and it works with the surrounding walls and creates a completely virtual world you can walk through. They show it with like guns for like a game kind of thing. I think that's one of the better implementations, but probably the most useful one I've seen was the new GoPro application. I know Scott showed it to us recently. They made a new GoPro that will film 360, and you can actually get on and watch it in YouTube and turn and look around as the video goes on and look at anything. I think that has quite a few applications, I mean, for helping improving. Use that to take a picture of something, and then you can take it to an actual lab and break down the individual elements. I'm thinking for maybe a dark thought, but crime scenes. Take something like that in there. Take a still image of the entire environment. Take it back to a lab, and you can break down the visual aspects of what happened in that situation.
So I think, again, with where we're at today, we're still at the point where commodity hardware and this kind of, you know, it's all converging to be able to essentially recapitulate the last 50 plus years in this. Because QuickTime VR, people don't talk about that anymore, but if you guys remember, it gave you the chance to take 360 and then navigate it. You do it in your browser, and then there was this other thing, I think, called iPix or something. I mean, like, I recall, we're talking 15 years ago, there were these things. So I think we're still in the mode where we're re-implementing with technologies that are now fast enough, low latency enough, you know, where
cheap enough,
portable enough. But what's going to be transformative is what people are calling the Internet of Things, connectivity, ubiquity, mobility.
Mm-hmm.
That, with all this, that's going to be the kit. That there, people will find killer apps.
So we're going to wrap this up maybe with a final thought. We thought we'd title this podcast Sounding Improbable. And the reason we did that is on the shelf of my desk, there's a Spanish CAD kit, which is called Agencer l'improbable. Oh, that's French. To enable the improbable. Take on the improbable. And Ruth saw that and got intrigued. So what is it about the improbable in the context of our discussion that you'd like to bring up? Put you on the spot.
Yes.
Okay. No, although, as we were discussing, you immediately said, I want to talk about experience.
Yes. Well, I think...
So improbable experiences.
Yeah. So I really believe that this integration of our human, like, everyday embodied experience with simulated experience allows us to imagine new types of experience. I'd love an improbable experience, one that has more potential meanings than I could have in my current embodied state.
So the last thing you want is an amusement park ride when you could just go to an amusement park and get it.
Well, I'd love to feel the wind in my hair at the amusement park and scream at the roller coaster, but in that simulated space, if there was a way to transcend what I can experience.
Or to have experiences you can't have.
Yes, yeah. To have experiences I can't have. Improbable experiences, that would be awesome.
Corey, you have a final thought?
I'm more got a question for you on that thought. Do you think it's a matter of current implementations of technology, or do you think it's a matter of technology hasn't advanced far enough to have these improbable experiences?
I think it's Roger's thought where it's about the content. I think it's hard for us to imagine.
And you know, clearly, you know, one of the works of VR that I put up here is at least 25 years old now, which is Shar Davis' famous work. And basically, she created these dream sequences in VR where you were floating through spaces that were not three-dimensional. They were, who knows? and basically, you were having a visual experience that was not an analog to the everyday world.
So her work, Osmos, actually changed my life. It changed the course of my career. I saw that piece and I went, okay, I now know that as a painter, I can never bring the person into the experience at the level that I need to be. I need to change what I do.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, with that, you put on an HMD and a vest that as you breathe, it actually through your breath, through inhaling and exhaling and just leaning forward or to the side, whatever, you navigated this virtual world. And you were in for 45 minutes. Tell me one Oculus experience today that's 45 minutes. Yeah. People don't sit.
Yeah. So basically, in that case, you could, by breathing in and out, you would go up or down in the space, and by leaning forward or back, you'd move forward. So it was nothing else. It was purely a embodied navigation, and the visual experience that you had was not an analog of the real world. It was this.
It's spectacular to this day. Just even, you know, the aesthetics, the refinement. So she was giving people an experience they could not get in physical reality.
So I vote against the amusement park ride, although ironically on a different project we're going to do a roller coaster ride through data. So, but let me tell you,
I will not show both of y'all the video and let y'all redecide. Or, it depends on how they implement it. I'll admit it.
I think we should wrap this up.
Well, this has been myself, Corey Smart, Roger Molina, and Ruth West. It's been great talking to y'all. Hope to talk to you later on.
Right on.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.